It's summertime, time to hang in a hammock and crack open a good book. Alan Chews offers his list of this season's great reads. You may want to get paper and pen ready because we'll repeat the titles and authors in case you don't catch them the first time.
I'm going to recommend some big books that make entire worlds come to life, books that make time as it goes by stand still. First, Doris Lessing's no-frills portrait of a London group house, run by a generous, long-suffering woman with a deep emotional life and a wide surmise that takes in family, love, and politics from the 60s onward in England and Africa. It's called The Sweetest Dream.
Perhaps one's fate is just one's temperament, invisibly attracting people and events. There are people who, probably unconsciously when young, until it is forced on them that this is their character, use a certain passivity towards life, watching to see what will arrive on their plate or drop in their lap or stare them in the face. What's wrong with you? Are you blind? And then try not so much to grasp it as wait, allowing the thing to develop itself, show itself. Then the task is to do your best with it. Do what you can. Would she have believed, age 19, marrying Johnny, when there was no reason to expect anything ever but war and bad times, that she would find herself a kind of house mother? But earth mother was the current term. Where along the road should she have said, if she'd been determined to avert this fate, no, I won't?
Next, we plunge into quite a different world, that of the American black middle class. The darker nation, as Talcott Garland, the lawyer narrator, calls it, and the culture and rituals of a major law school, and some unsolved murders and mysteries. All this in Stephen Carter's bountiful first novel, a family thriller set in New England and Washington, D.C., called The Emperor of Ocean Park.
My parents liked to tell how they bought the house for a song back in the 60s when Martha's Vineyard and the black middle-class colony that summers there were still smart and secret. Lately, in my father's oft-repeated view, the vineyard had tumbled downhill, for it was crowded and noisy, and besides, they let everyone in now, by which he meant black people less well off than we.
Next, a book of normal length, but it's got a lot of power. Carol Shields' new novel, set in Canada, a tug of hearts between mother and wayward daughter. It's called Unless.
It happens that I'm going through a period of great unhappiness and loss just now. All my life I've heard people speak of finding themselves in acute pain, bankrupt in spirit and body, but I've never understood what they meant. To lose, to have lost. I believed these visitations of darkness lasted only a few minutes or hours, and that these saddened people, in between bouts, were occupied, as we all were, with the useful monotony of happiness. But happiness is not what I thought. Happiness is the lucky pane of glass you carry in your head. It takes all your cunning just to hang on to it. And once it's smashed, you have to move into a different sort of life.
For readers of history and science fiction, I'd recommend another big fat book. It's a brilliant piece of work called The Years of Rice and Salt by Kim Stanley Robinson. Imagine, the bubonic plague wipes out most of Europe's population, leaving America to be discovered and developed by the Arabs on one coast and the Chinese on the other. Here's a description of Europe wiped out by the plague.
They ride by fields that lay rank with unharvested crops, barley fallen over itself, apple trees with apples dry in the branches or black on the ground, no cart tracks or hoof prints or footprints in the dust of the road. Sun sets, the gibbous moon misshapen overhead. Owl dips over field. A sudden gust, how big the world seems in a wind. Horses are tense, monkey too. They came to an empty bridge and crossed it, hooves thwacking the planks. Now they came on some wooden buildings with thatched roofs. But no fires, no lantern light. They moved on. More buildings appeared through the trees, but still no people. The dark land was empty.
Seven songs inside your head, seven sets of words you know. I know, you know, what?
More novels with guitars in hand. Madison Bell's coming-of-age story about a 21-year-old Southern rock and roller touring across the country. It's named after the band in the story, anything goes.
Monday morning, I woke up with a piece of a verse like it had come drifting out of my dreams. I picked up the guitar and went back to it. Didn't even bother making coffee. I wanted to stay where I was at, near the place the words were coming from. Box of 8-tracks, box of skulls, hat you wore last week. Cigars, cigarettes, cocoa beer, hole in the bucket leaks.
And next, Blues Lessons by the gifted Midwestern novelist Robert Hellinga, a story about a young Michigan white boy growing up in a world of racial confusion, guided in his heart by the blues music he loves so well.
Every night at small venues around the country, thousands of performers like me walk out onto small stages to sing their songs and tell their stories and play their instruments. And thousands of audiences decide, minute by minute, song by song, whether we're worth attending to. Sometimes we die a thousand deaths, but other times the music opens our hearts, lifts the veil of familiarity, reveals the mysterious inner life of things, raw, fresh, fragile. I walked out onto the stage and picked up the Nick Lucas guitar. Before I began to play, though, I looked at the note to myself that I always kept in the inner pocket of my suit jacket. "Don't play too fast," it said. I shoved the note back in my pocket and began to play. Well, you could steal my woman, sure can't keep her long. You could steal my woman, sure can't keep her long. I got a new way of loving, Californians can't catch on.
If you're looking for short story collections to carry with you this summer, I'd recommend Pulitzer Prize winner Richard Ford's newest collection, A Multitude of Sins. Here's Ford reading the opening of his wonderful story, Calling.
A year after my father departed, moved to St. Louis, and left my mother and me behind in New Orleans to look after ourselves in whatever manner we could, he called on the telephone one afternoon and asked to speak to me. This was before Christmas, 1961. I was home from military school in Florida. My mother had begun her new singing career, which meant taking voice lessons at a local academy and also letting a tall black man who was her accompanist move into our house and into her bedroom while passing himself off to the neighborhood as the yard man. William DeBinion was his name, and together he and my mother drank far too much and filled up the ashtrays and played jazz recordings too loud and made unwelcome noise until late, which had not been how things were done when my father was there.
And there's Ron Carlson's sweet and adventurous new collection, At the Jim Bridger. Listen to Carlson reading the opening of his short story, Single Woman for Long Walks on the Beach.
Looking for a young woman for a chance to exchange introductory remarks and help on homework, particularly math and social studies. Perhaps the term project, the triptych display about continental drift. Share pencils, markers, erasers, including all those in the shapes of animals. And lunch, with the possibility of swapping the store-bought Aunt Dorothy's big rolls for homemade tomato sandwiches stuffed with slices of sharp cheddar. Merging our potato chips on a paper plate. Talking about our childhood until the bell rings, keeping this up, lunching, both in the cafeteria and on the front steps of the school, until, laughing one day, we decide to skip quickly away in my car. A lark, that's what we'll share as this lark, driving the strange daytime streets while all our classmates suffer under the confused rule of Mrs. Del Monrico and her versions of what happened when the great land masses first pulled apart.
And next, I'd recommend Melissa Pritchard's Link Stories, the dreamy and delightful collection, Disappearing Ingenue.
Eleanor Luther, once known to her Isabella Street neighbors as Kit for Kitten, and to the various small children of Isabella and Thayer Streets as Moo or Mooser, happened while dusting her husband's nightstand upon a terrible clue. Like the miniature key given by Bluebeard to his newest and most naive wife, "My palace is yours, dearest, but for one small door," Eleanor plonked down on the just-stripped bed to read lyrics dashed out in Neil's spidery, introverted hand. Your smile is like sunlight. Your love is all mine. Your eyes blue magic. Your blonde hair divine. Eleanor jabbed the note back into the paperback book it had dropped out of, the Milagro Beanfield War, and resumed cleaning, switching on the vacuum that had once belonged to Neil's grandmother, heavy as a torpedo, roaring like hell's oven, and for all its sound and fury, picking up very little. As a housekeeper, Eleanor balked. And no doubt this was why. You risked uncovering something. If Neil was having an affair, why ever should she want to know?
All these novels, these collections, it's my idea of a summer-long picnic of language and story. But if you insist on what some people call real life, I'd recommend, finally, a thrilling and intelligent nonfiction narrative set fairly long ago and far away on the high seas in the 17th century Pacific. Batavia's Graveyard by British journalist Mike Dash. It's got mutineers and a shipwreck and Dutch religious heretics turned murderers.
It was as though they'd been cast up on the edges of the world. Even today, on sullen afternoons, the islands of the Abrolhos are monochrome and listless, so drab they seem to suck the colour from the sky. The only thing alive there is the wind. The gales blow endlessly throughout the southern winter, tearing up from the roaring 40s and billowing so hard that they bend the low scrub double. Wind cracks and rattles canvas and whistles in the gaps between the coral. From May until July, the islands are swept repeatedly by storms, which rage for up to 10 days at a time, pile up surf against the reefs, and smash anything in their path, sending spray 30 or 40 feet into the air.
Anyone's summer will seem wonderful after this story. So hoist the sails and onward into the deep season of reading.
Alan Chews teaches writing at George Mason University in Virginia. His summer reading list includes The Sweetest Dream by Doris Lessing, The Emperor of Ocean Park by Stephen Carter, Unless by Carol Shields, The Years of Rice and Salt by Kim Stanley Robinson, Anything Goes by Madison Bell, Blues Lessons by Robert Hellinga, A Multitude of Sins by Richard Ford, At the Jim Bridger by Ron Carlson, Disappearing Ingenue by Melissa Pritchard, and Batavia's Graveyard by Mike Dash. You can also check out our website. That's npr.org.